Good morning. You're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network, produced by the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center. I'm Judith. With us today is Stuart Onan, named one of the best young writers in 1996, I believe, by Granta. Granta does not have a political or literary manifesto, but it does have a belief in the power and urgency of the story, both in fiction and nonfiction, and the story's supreme ability to describe, illuminate, and make real. And these are the people that gave him that award. His latest book, he's written a lot, and they all sound like very interesting books, is called The Good Wife, and it's about a woman who stays married to her husband despite his long-term incarceration. He did a lot of research before he wrote that book, he's told me off the air, including interviewing one of our local people in the Prison Action Network, Allison Coleman, whose husband of over 20 years was recently released after a 20-year incarceration. So welcome to the program, Stuart.
Thank you, Judith.
I'm confessing at the offset that I've never read any of your books, although in doing my research for this program, I was definitely seduced by the titles and the brief descriptions from your website and other reviews that I read online, and I really hope to find time to correct this deficiency soon. But maybe you'll share a little of her story with us this morning. Stuart, can you tell us about Patty Dickerson, the good wife?
Well, Patty grew up in Owego, New York, which is down on the southern tier, there right off Route 17. And when she's in her early 20s, her husband, Tommy, is convicted of second-degree murder and is sent away, first to Auburn, and then later to Clinton and then Bear Hill. And he does, I believe it's a bit of at least 15 to life. And basically the story is how she changes through these years and becomes a stronger and stronger person as she has to deal with the difficulties that surround being the wife of an inmate.
And how did you come to write a book about a prisoner's wife? What did you know about being a family member or having a loved one in prison?
Well, I knew nothing, and that's usually how I start out with a book. I find something that interests me, but that I know very little about, and I kind of have to just admit that I'm completely ignorant, and then go out and talk to people that are really in that situation, and do a lot of research sort of around it. I talk with a lot of people in the court system, with detectives, with sheriffs, with, just covered every little bit that I could. And then try to understand it. As I come to understand it, I'm hoping as I write that the reader will come to understand it as well. And often I'll take a character like Patty who knows nothing of the system either. And so as she goes through it, she has to learn it. I mean, because, she needs to learn it. And it's very difficult sometimes to learn. It's a very, hard and complicated and sometimes pointlessly complicated system that she has to deal with. So as she learns, the reader learns, and that kind of mirrors my process.
That's a very interesting process. Was there did you have at the beginning a message that you were hoping to get across, or it sounds like you were mostly trying to find out something for yourself about this situation?
Well, I was hoping I could get across to the reader what it really feels like.
Mm-hmm.
To be in that situation and to let the reader understand what it feels like. Because I from the very beginning, when I thought of Patty, it seems to me that it's a story that really hasn't been told that much, especially to the American public. The Prisoner's Wife by Asha Bandalay, of course, is an interesting and popular book. But beyond that, there's very little literature on it. And I thought this was a big part of American life that had been sort of overlooked.
So what do you think was the most difficult, what was the most difficult part of this story for you and for the reader and for Patty, do you think?
Well, for me, it was simply, coming to understand how she does it, how she gets through the years, how she raises her son, how and why she stays with Tommy for so long, when so many other women seem to fall by the wayside. For the reader, I think the difficulty is also trying to understand Patty and trying to to find some sort of hope for her, because she's, you know, she does not come from money. She works a lot of, you know, sort of dead-end jobs. She stays in the small community that she's from, and tries to stick with what she knows, because that's all she knows. And so for some readers, they think there may not be enough hope in the book. But I hope that Patty's, and this is the hardest thing for Patty, to find the hope, to keep finding that faith year after year, to just hang in there. And she does. I think, you know, she not only sort of endures, but, you know, in the end, I believe it's a happy ending. And she's become much, much stronger through these years. A lot of people tell me, oh, there's not a lot happens in the book. Mm-hmm. And I think everything happens in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, life happens in the book. She grows up. Casey grows up. Tommy grows up. And as a family, they find a way to stay together. And that's very difficult.
I'm thinking, though, as you're talking, that life itself is difficult. And it's almost, do you see that her story is not that much different from the story of anyone?
No, I don't think it's really that much different in a way. I mean, she just has the great obstacle of the prison walls that she constantly has to sort of get across or under or through. She's got to deal with it somehow. But really, it's about, you know, carrying on and going from day to day and, you know, and having hope and having faith. And usually that's what my books are about. Mm-hmm. They're about people that have to find a way to endure. And I think, you know, she does. And part of it, I think, is just her character. I think from the very beginning, she was a good and very hardworking person.
Do you go into her childhood much at all? Do we get a sense of how she developed that strong character?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a family story in several ways. And one is, of course, the family that she puts together with Tommy and with their son, Casey. But there's also her own family who stand by her, and her relationship with her mother and her relationship with her sisters. And everybody is involved in it that way. So it's about, you know, really it's about how this woman came to be, you know, the strong woman that she is by the end of the book.
In the reviews I've read, because I really haven't had time to read your book, but I've been reading these reviews, and it sounds to me that it's also a story about poverty, in a sense. I mean, she only was able to work at very low-paying jobs and eventually even, I think, realized she was eligible for welfare. And I'm sure a lot of that was because her husband was in prison and couldn't support the family, and so it was all on her shoulders. But
I think part of those reviews are because the people that are doing the reviewing, you know, are upper class.
Okay.
And so when they see someone who's working, say, at Montgomery Ward or working at a liquor store, they immediately think that they're poor. So I think there's a little bit of that sort of, you know, the big city bias there. I write a lot about just working class people.
Okay.
And I mean, sometimes, yeah, they don't have all the money in the world, but I don't think Patty would ever see herself as poor. Mm-hmm. You know, she has a roof over her head, she can feed Casey, you know. No, I don't really know if the book is about poverty in that sense.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to take a minute to remind our listeners that they're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network and that our guest today is Stuart Onan, an author and writer of many things, including his latest book, The Good Wife. Stuart, would you be willing to read a few pages for us?
Certainly.
That would be great.
I've got a very short section here that it talks about his first year in prison. And this is a very brief part of a section called Heart-Shaped Box. She can't even call him. He can call her, but only at prearranged times and only collect. She's taking unpaid leave, so there's no paycheck coming in where there used to be two. We better get off, she says. Yeah, he says, and then they stay on. Their calls are taped, his letters to her opened. She's not allowed to bring him any food or money or cigarettes, not even a blanket. Sometimes she gets to kiss him hello and goodbye when she visits, sometimes not, depending on the guard's mood. Her doctor says the metal detector won't hurt the baby as long as she doesn't go through it four or five times a day. Some days she goes through two or three times and then worries. The first time she meets their lawyer, she wishes she'd tried harder to come up with the money. He's young and looks nervous in his skinny tie, a college kid dressed for an interview. She's supposed to call him Andy.
I want you to keep going.
And that's when he's just in the county jail there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then, of course, he moves on to Auburn and then up to Clinton. And Patty visits him there. Here's a little piece from how she usually goes around her visiting process.
Oh, great.
Friday nights, Patty goes to bed early so she can wake up with the sun. In the morning, her mother slips her robe on and starts a pot of coffee. They don't discuss how he's doing, and Patty would never ask if she wants to come along. Her mother can't acknowledge that after everything, Tommy is still the center of her life. "I can't tell you what to do," she says. "If you want me to tell you how I feel about the whole situation, I'll tell you, but you're probably not going to like what I have to say. I already know how you feel." "Then you should know why I feel that way. You should." "I do," Patty says. "There's nothing I can do for him. I know that sounds cruel, but it's true. I'm worried about you now. You're the one who has to pick up the pieces, and I know from experience how hard that can be, so I'm going to do everything I can to help you, but I'm not going to lie and say I'm happy about it." "You don't have to lie," Patty says, twisting the word. "Just don't pretend like he doesn't exist." It is cruel of her mother, writing Tommy off and then saying she's doing it for her sake. It wouldn't bother Patty so much if she didn't find herself drifting through the weeks, catching herself making a sandwich for her lunch pail or mindlessly waiting in line at the bank as if everything's fine, as if she's succeeded in forgetting that part of her life. Because as much as she needs to see him, she's come to dread the drive to Auburn. She feels sick now even before she leaves, sometimes the night before, her stomach gnawing on itself. Tommy's losing weight. His gums bleed. The visit's always too short, ruined by their shared knowledge that it can't last. Unfairly, she anticipates the hours of letdown after she passes her stamped hand under the blacklight, and the guilt she'll feel for leaving him there. Later, in the truck, she doesn't speak, as if a careless word might break the delicate spell that holds them together. It's only when she clears the southern tip of the lake, 20 miles, a suitable period of mourning, that she turns on the radio and discovers, once again, that the rest of the world is still there.
Well, I'm sure some of our listeners are identifying with this story. Those visits to those far-off prisons are part of a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think there's the good and the bad of that experience, that's in the book there. And one thing that's great about Allison and all the other people that helped me, put the book together is that I hope people in that situation will be able to see their experience reflected, I hope truthfully and honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And it will also serve in a way as sort of a memory book to remind them and to say, oh, yeah, I forgot about it, but I remember that now. Because as we go through life, a lot of the stuff just sort of, falls off us or bounces off of us. Mm-hmm. But in a book, it's all going to be there.
Well, I think that you're going to be reflecting back to them a sort of nobility and dignity and courageousness that probably most of us haven't ever acknowledged because we're just too busy getting through.
And along with that, also the impatience and the pettiness and the, the crampiness and the nastiness sometimes of the situation, the good and the bad. I hope it's not just sort of a glowing picture of how wonderful Patty is, because she has, she has her tough moments and her tough years, and, the relationships change. Certainly her relationship with her son and Tommy's relationship with their son, Casey, is very difficult and very painful. But I hope on the whole, though, that it is, in a way, a hopeful book. People tell me, oh, it's terribly depressing. I'm like, it has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
They end up together. It's a romance.
I guess what I meant more was I think people need to be seen. They need to be acknowledged. And it sounds to me that you gave a gift to people by acknowledging who they are and what what their situation has been in some ways. And I hope
I do that in the book. I hope I recognize, you know, these lives. And it's you know, in a way, it's utterly my responsibility. I mean, I can't go in there and say, you know, please give me access to your world that no one else really knows of and no one understands, and let me be the carrier of your story, unless I really do my legwork and do my best to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So for any and all, you know, errors in the book, please forgive me. I did my best.
Have you heard from, have any of the people that you talked to read your book and given you any yes?
Oh, yes, the people that helped me put it together, I showed it to them in manuscript.
Okay.
So that I wouldn't make any really glaring, horrible errors. That, you know, I hoped that they would help me catch those before it actually got into print. And I did get a wonderful letter from a man in Clinton and thanking me for writing the book and telling him he appreciates that much more how much his wife has done for him over the years.
Mm.
And that was, you know, the greatest praise that I could get.
Mm-hmm.
Now forget the reviews, forget everything else, but to have people in that situation say, you know, yes, you represented us well. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think in a way, in many books, certainly fiction books and movies, you can tell the general public almost anything and they'll believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't count as the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've just been thinking, you're going to be here in Albany on January the 16th for the annual People's Celebration of Martin Luther King's Life and Principles, and you're going to be awarded the annual Drum Major for Justice Award at that event. And I would imagine that a lot of the people that you talk to in researching this book will be at that event, and I'm thinking it's going to be a wonderful sort of reunion of all of you. Are you expecting that and looking forward to that?
Oh, yeah. I'm very excited about it. And, you know, it's very humbling, you know, just to be associated at all with Martin Luther King and, you know, all the things that he did and everything he stands for. It's huge.
Yeah.
I think. I can't imagine a better award to get.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And I agree with you, yes. So I just want to tell our listeners that this is a public event, and anybody is welcome to attend this event. So let me just tell them for a minute about it. It's on Monday, January 16th, and this event is an annual event, and it's sponsored by the Center for Law and Justice. And as time has gone on, other groups have joined in sponsoring it. The Children of Prisoners Initiative, Prison Families of New York, is a sponsor. The Women in Prison Project are sponsoring it, and the New York Campaign for Telephone Justice are some of the sponsors. And I understand you're going to be there signing copies of the book that will be for sale, so that'll be a nice opportunity for people. And are you going to be staying for the interactive program afterward? I know after the award, there's going to be an interactive discussion about the impact of incarceration on families and children.
Oh, yes, I'm hoping to, definitely.
Fabulous. Yeah, the Women in Prison Project are also going to present a new report there, so it should be an interesting thing. Not everyone, however, I'm sure, will be able to come out for that event, unfortunately, but do you have any other appearances scheduled in the nearby area?
No, that is it.
Okay. Do you want to give out your website information or any other way that people can get in touch, or don't authors need that?
My website is www.stewart-onan.com.
Oh.
And it has all the books on there and, you know, and what's going on.
So do you have any other books in I don't mean that at all. I mean, do you have a new book? Have you started something new?
Well, I just finished a book in November, and I just started a new one last month, December. The newest one is, right now we don't have a publisher for it yet, but it's about Red Lobster and how the Red Lobster is being shut down, and it's the last night in the life of this Red Lobster seen through the eyes of the general manager.
Ah, the Red Lobster restaurant.
The Red Lobster restaurant.
At first I thought maybe it was a bit.
Yes, indeed. And it's the Red Lobster chain doesn't franchise. So they own all their restaurants, and even the managers of the restaurants are just sort of employees. Mm. So obviously, you know, a manager tries to give everything that he or she possibly can to the restaurant to make it work. And in this case, the corporation's saying, well, that's it. It's all done. So it's sort of a, you know, how do you continue to maintain pride in what you're doing when any sort of hope is taken away?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's about enduring and community and family and sort of keeping things together in the face of the worst.
Yeah. So you write nonfiction as well as fiction?
Yes.
And this sounds like a nonfiction book.
Well, no, this is actually a novel.
It's a novel, okay.
It's actually a short
novel. So they're not really shutting down the Red Lobster restaurant?
Well, they did. They did.
Oh, they did.
In the town right next to mine here in Connecticut, they did that.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they did it overnight. People showed up the next day for work, and the doors were chained.
Oh.
And I just thought, well, that's a strange situation to be in. So I started to do my research on it and talk with people and, you know, and got interested in it. And that's usually how things happen.
Well, let's just get back to a last few words about the good wife, Patty Dickerson. Do you have any last words to tell us about her before we have to end it?
Well, I guess it's basically her story, completely from her point of view, and letting the reader walk in her shoes and see the world from her point of view and no one else's. And in that sense, I hope it moves readers into a better understanding of, again, what it really is like to go through this process and to live with it and to carry it, because it is a burden. I mean, any kind of love is a joy, but in this case, it's also a burden in a way. And how people try to stay strong and what they go to, what their source of strength is, and what they need from day to day, week to week, year to year, a whole life.
It's about life. It sounds like a valuable book. I'm really looking forward to reading it. And
well, I just hope it's not too preachy.
Okay, I'll let you know. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Judith.
And we'll see you on Monday.
Take care.
The 16th. Bye-bye.